Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on CrackSidewalks.com. Joe McCann and Phil Bush here with you once again. And Phil, I can't believe it. The regular season is over.
Yeah, as of the time we're recording this, there is no longer any win, and you get to play another game season going on. It is win or go home, either in your conference tournaments or your March Madness. It's upon us.
We have somewhere between 2 and 9 Marquette games left to enjoy this season. Hopefully it's much closer to 9 than it is 2.
Right.
But we'll be talking about just the week that was a little bit, and we'll look ahead to the Big East tournament and what we can expect out of Marquette and out of the Big East in general, looking ahead to a big week. And as we also hold our breath and wait for some kind of update on Tyler Kolek. But Phil, let's just, before we move on to the Big East tournament and all that stuff, let's just talk about the past week. And really, it was about what we had kind of anticipated, basically what we predicted in the last podcast. We expected 1-1 without Tyler Kolek. As expected against Connecticut, that game did not go Marquette's way. They fought their butts off. I was proud of the way they played. UConn just a little too good. And then they got what felt like a much-needed win. I don't know if I'd say much-needed, but it just, I don't know. There was a little bit of a exhale, if that maybe describes it well, about beating Xavier. It's like just getting a win without Tyler Kolek felt pretty good.
Yeah. Well, and just to prove, like, both the Creighton and the UConn game, like, it felt like Marquette was on the cusp or there were pieces there, but we couldn't tell how good the team was or how capable the team was without Tyler Kolek, because, you know, essentially we played, you know, two top 10 teams. One of whom is, you know, a top three, you know, could be a national title contender or a strong national title contender. So it's hard to say, oh, how's this compare? But then going and playing Xavier, and we'll talk about the game in detail. It wasn't without its moments, but that was a game that says, hey, there, you know, let's not forget there is talent here. And, you know, it took a little bit to get used to not playing without Tyler, but, you know, it might be the best thing to happen to this team, just in terms of the performances we're now getting out of some of the players and the capabilities we're now seeing. I would have rather have Tyler perfectly healthy this whole time, but there may be ways to exploit this to our benefit.
Yeah, I think some guys stepped up in Tyler's absence, and I think if Marquette continues to get that same level of effort when Tyler comes back, should be an exciting March, I would hope. As long as, you know, they just guard against the tendency of, oh, Tyler's back, well, we can all relax. No. It's keep that intensity up, keep and continue to perform. And I think there's plenty of reason to be optimistic. I guess maybe we'll start just touch on the UConn game just a little bit. You know, as expected, it was a loss. Marquette was down 11 at the half, and, you know, they battled pretty well in the second half. But, man, the fact that, you know, Connecticut shot 50% from three in the game and did not blow Marquette out was, I think it speaks to the effort Marquette brought in that game, that they hung with a team that really has been, like, one of the dominant teams in college basketball this season. And, yeah, I know that you don't want to talk, like, moral victories, but I think that is about as well as you could have realistically expected Marquette to play in that game.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, I don't believe in moral victories either, and but there's also, like, no hanging your head over that performance, right? I mean, they did what they could. If Marquette's three-point shooting was a little better or their two-point shooting was a little better, you know, maybe they'd get closer. I also thought the rivalry, like, got a little juice during the game, but then, you know, Dan Hurley took a little juice out of the rivalry, so I don't know how I feel about that. But, you know, the crowd was fired up when Cam Spencer decided to to convey some feelings to the Marquette bench.
Yes. Cam will talk his talk. That's for sure. Cam Spencer will. But yeah, man, what's up with Dan Hurley being so nice and trying to get us to like him? You know, like he's like,
I want to hate you like, so much, but you won't let me.
Yeah, I know. It's like I want to hate the guy, but he just he does nothing but say glowing things about Marquette and like I'm not saying it's fake, but it's like if it was, I would believe it. Like he's just like, oh, it's just such an honor to play them, and I just have so much respect for him. He doesn't like say that about anyone else in the Big East, and maybe it's just a credit to what Shaka has built that, you know, the coach of the reigning national champions is saying that about Shaka, and again, I don't think he's faking. I don't know why he would, but yeah, it just seems like he's just so incredibly complimentary of Marquette both times they've played. And yeah, the fact that he told Cam Spencer to chill when he was talking crap to the Marquette bench, and he said, yeah, there are some fan bases that I don't mind that against. He goes, I just don't want him to do it against these guys because I just have too much respect. I guess it surprised me just a little bit. It's like something he doesn't have to say at all.
Right.
But he did. Yeah, but I don't know. Dan Hurley, stop trying to make me like you is all I'm saying.
Well, and he did mention, I didn't realize it, and I can't remember who the second player was, but he was a coach at a prep school that sent David Kubian and
Dwight Burke.
Dwight Burke to Marquette.
Yep.
So it's
not like, Burke, yep.
It's not like his connection to the university is not like a long, you know, it's not just a Shaka thing, right? Like he clearly had connections with the university before that. So yeah, I don't know. Like, and it's also kind of one of these, like, I think he's crazy, but also he's kind of like my kind of crazy because he's calling out Providence fans. He's calling out Creighton fans. I mean, good on you, Dan Hurley. Like, I still hate your team. And I will say, I think UConn is, if they're not there, they're approaching like the Louisville during Conference USA Big East rivalry for me, for Marquette.
Yeah. I have noticed that over maybe the last year or two that, you know, for the first, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years of the, you know, of the new Big East, there was a lot of let's just cheer for each other and we're all in this together and we're not going to root against each other and we're going to root for every team in the Big East. And there was really no juice between a lot of the teams, maybe between to the teams that had played each other forever, like say between Georgetown and Seton Hall or Georgetown and Providence or Seton Hall and St. John's or UConn, those teams have been playing each other in the Big East for years, and there was juice between them. But as far as like juice between, say, Marquette and Seton Hall, or Marquette and Connecticut, or you know, Creighton and Providence, or anything like that, there wasn't a whole lot of that. But I feel like there's a little bit more of that now, where there's like a little animosity among the fan bases. They get after each other on Twitter. There's, you know, a lot of trash talking between the teams or players or just fans. So I am glad to see that there is a little healthy animosity between some of the newer fan bases that have not been in the same league as long. And Connecticut Marquette is a great example of that.
Right.
Of two teams that, again, granted, Connecticut joined later after the Catholic 7+3 formed the new Big East. But still, to see this rivalry kind of simmer up a little bit, and there are probably a few others around the league, I think that's good to see. There's a little less of, we're all in this together, we're all going to cheer for each other, and a little more is of, yeah, we're proud of the Big East, but man, I hate those guys.
Right, right. Well, I mean, it was survival mode, right? And everybody had to band together, and it was turbulent times, and now the Big East has established itself. I think if you at least look at the metrics, at least, you know, it's certainly top three best basketball conference in the country, and you know, most of the metrics would put it as a total conference, you know, maybe the second best behind the Big 12, you know, and that's with DePaul's dead carcass dragging us down. So, you know, the conference kind of survived and now it's thriving. And now that it's thriving, everyone's like, yeah, F that team, right? And like all these things are starting to get to the fan bases and they're being remembered and it's, you know, this thing or that thing. And I love it. It makes the basketball more interesting. And, you know, if you think about it, you know, the Big East is historically extremely physical. We saw it, you know, in the UConn game even. One of the things I wanted to call out was Oso Iguodaro was probably still coming off sit, you know, he sat out the Creighton game and was still probably recovering from that sickness for the UConn game. And but he was still, you know, he was getting his shoulder into Donovan Klein anytime he was around the rim, right? Like they were physical in a way that they weren't when they played UConn on the road. And I think that's a good sign that even when the team is, you know, down a critical piece, that they're still going to have that fight. They're going to still be physical. They're still going to get in there and compete. And that was the big takeaway from the Connecticut game is if we're at full strength and we're not playing at Stores or, you know, in Connecticut, I'm not saying we're likely to win. I'm just saying we've got a chance to beat a UConn in March Madness, and that's all you really want.
Yeah. I mean, Connecticut is great and would be favored on any floor against Marquette, but they are not unbeatable, right? Like, if they played 100 times, Connecticut's not going to win 100. You know, Marquette, yeah, if they're full strength and maybe a few more bounces go their way, certainly capable of beating a team like Connecticut. Hasn't happened this year, and that's okay because Connecticut is great, and who knows, we may get one more shot at Connecticut in March, maybe two more shots. We'll talk about that a little later. But yeah, I think you touched on definitely the outstanding effort by Oso. He was definitely not afraid of Klingon at all. He gave an outstanding effort in that game to keep Marquette in it and keep him competitive. He had 16-8 in that game. Cam Jones, pretty good as well. I mean, 18 points. Essentially having to play point guard with Tyler out. It's a little bit of a different role for him, obviously. But right. I thought he did it well, and he and Stevie Mitchell essentially kind of shared backcourt duties there. The team overall did not have as many assists as Marquette would usually have in its normal offense with Tyler running it. Only 8 assists as a team. I mean, I think maybe better than the last previous game against Creighton without.
Yeah,
Tyler,
they had 6. They had 6 against Creighton. Yeah, so yeah. They're trending in the correct direction.
Right, but. Yeah, but when you're without the nation's leader in assists, that's going to have an effect on you. And good effort, didn't get it done, and not unexpected. But the good news was Marquette was able to bounce back and get a nice win against Xavier on Saturday. So Marquette swept Xavier on the season, and again, but that game was heavily carried by Oso and Cam. So, I mean, 54 points between those two guys combined in the 86-80 win over Xavier. And I think, for whatever reason, I don't know how to describe it exactly, but maybe just a little bit of a relief just after Marquette lost back-to-back games. And even though we are anticipating Tyler Kolek coming back, and then so you probably wouldn't judge them too much, I would hope, if they lost to Xavier. But the fact that they were able to kind of rally together, put together a great performance as a team, like especially major contributions from Cam and Oso. It was, just maybe a little bit of an exhale to see them beat a decent team on the road and stop a little mini two-game skid.
Yeah, well, I mean, any win on the road is a challenging win, right? In the Big East, right? Even, you know, maybe not DePaul or Georgetown, right? But any mid-tier or above Big East team going on the road and winning that game is always going to be a challenge. So just getting the win at all is a good sign. But I think the thing that kind of, I think, helps everyone kind of get, you know, kind of a take a deep breath and relax a little bit is, you know, I think the committees, when they go to seeding selection, is probably willing to overlook, you know, yeah, you lost to 2 top 10 teams, you know, one of which was on the road without arguably your best player. We're not going to knock your seeding for that if that player is coming back, right? If it's a season-ending injury, they're going to evaluate you as you are now, right? But if they're looking, you know, at the roster and assuming Tyler Kolek comes back, they'll go, oh, all right, Tyler, without them, you know, who knows what happened with UConn and Creighton. But when you look at that Xavier game, I don't know that they would have looked as forgivingly at a loss there, right? I don't think they would have penalized us, but you lose to Xavier, and it's much easier to move Marquette down to, you know, say a three seed or something like that. And, you know, if Tyler doesn't play in the Big East tournament and Marquette goes into the March Madness on a four-game losing streak, you know, I don't think we'd get to a four, but, I mean, it certainly gets riskier, right? So that's yep. a case of, you know, the win kind of avoids a skid. It says, hey, there's talent here. It wasn't a fluke, right? Like you said, Oso and Cam Jones just had a ridiculous night, which kind of says, okay, hey, Marquette can do this without Tyler Kolek if it comes to it. So I think that was the big thing.
Yeah, we mentioned the assist a moment ago. Cam a little more comfortable in that role. Yeah, he had 30 points, but he also had 9 assists.
Crazy.
In that game.
And 5 rebounds.
I would assume that's a career high for Cam. You know, he's just because he's always playing alongside Tyler, and he's not usually a guy distributing. 9 assists probably sounds like a career high for Cam Jones. But 30 points for him. Yeah, he was fantastic. Shot the ball well, and just the things that Cam can do around the rim never cease to amaze me. Just the body control and the spin he can put on the ball mm-hmm. off the glass to get it to go in. I could watch highlights of him doing that all day. Absolutely all day. He's just magnificent driving to the basket. And Cam was truly in his bag on Saturday against Xavier.
Yeah, and I think he was adequate defensively too, right? Like, you know, he's not the world's greatest defender, right? And that's fine. We don't need him to be that. But he was able to switch. He was playing big. He had all the things he needed to stay on the floor for extended periods of time, which allowed his offense to kind of cook. And the other part was his body control, you know, like you mentioned, just around the hoop, but just handling the ball, knowing where everyone was. You know, he had a couple of pocket passes to Oso, you know, where Oso got layups and dunks, which, you know, that's a Tyler Kolek staple. And it's basically like Oso's like, well, you know, Cam, we can do the same thing too. And Cam was like, oh, okay, well, that's cool. Let's give that a go. And, you know, I don't know. We're, you know, Cam is leading the Big East in scoring at least since the Butler game, right? He was certainly in a slump for a while, was injured, was working through some stuff. He's now in the last 4 out of the last 5 games, he scored 34. I'm just looking at it real quick. So, going back to DePaul, he scored 34, 34, 17, 23, 25, 30. That's pretty good.
Heating up.
Yeah, that's pretty darn good. So, you know, if we can get a really strong Cam and a certainly just rock steady, solid Oso, and you throw in a healthy Tyler, I don't know, man. We might have something.
We might. You know, a good indicator, it's not a guarantee, certainly, but a good indicator of success in March is having a top 20 or top 25 adjusted offensive efficiency and adjusted defensive efficiency on KenPom. So a top 20 offense and a top 20 defense. Not many teams have that right now. Now, these numbers may have shifted since I did it this morning, but this is close enough. So these are the teams that have, according to KenPom on Sunday, both a top 20 offense and a top 20 defense. Houston.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good team.
Yep.
Connecticut.
Yep.
Pretty good team. Auburn, Arizona, Marquette. That's the list
right
now.
And those numbers are still correct.
Yeah. Some teams that are very close, Purdue, they're first offensively and 21st defensively, so they're right there. Tennessee is just outside of it. They're top 25 offense. North Carolina's a top 26 offense, but those teams both have top 5 defenses. Duke has a top 10 offense, but they're number 23 on defense, so they're also right there. Creighton is also very close at 10 and 22. 10 on offense, 22 on defense. So if you're looking for teams that you can trust in March, that would be the list I would submit to you. And that Marquette is one of them is something to hold on to. And the fact that they've done a lot of that missing somebody, right? I mean, right. There was a good stretch where they didn't have Stevie Mitchell. There was a good stretch they didn't have Cam Jones. They haven't had Tyler Kolek for 3 games. So a full-strength Marquette performing as a top 20 offense and a top 20 defense – can give you some comfort, because, like, I mean, it's obvious, but just to talk it, say it out loud is, you know, if one thing isn't working, there's another thing that could save you, right? Like, right. Say maybe you're not hitting shots, but you can stay in games with your defense. Or maybe you are playing against a very explosive offense that's going to bring down your defensive numbers, but you've got the offense to keep up with them. As opposed to, say, like a team like Alabama, right, who has a number 2 offense, but the number 102 defense. So if they have a game where their shots aren't falling, where their defense is not going to allow them to keep up. The fact that they have that balance of a top 20 offense and a top 20 defense, and they've had several games in Big East play where they are missing one, at least one guy who we are anticipating them having in March, whether it was Stevie, Chase, Cam, or Tyler.
Right, right. Well, and you know, it's kind of this season, you know, whether you believe, I wouldn't go so far as to say this is destiny, right? But one of the running jokes, if you've ever listened to the Men in Blazers podcast, which is big into European or big into English Premier League and national football, you know, soccer clubs. One of the jokes they have a running gag around is the script writers for the English Premier League, right? Like that everything is scripted, right? And if you were writing a Marquette script that leads to, you know, a Final Four or something like that, you know, last year of Shaka when we had pristine health, right? I don't think anyone other than Sean had some wrist issues for a couple of games. Other than that, we didn't have any significant injuries. That was the year where Marquette was building its confidence. Hey, this strategy, this approach, what we're doing, that's going to work. We believe in the culture. It was kind of the proof of concept. And they kind of got knocked down in that Michigan State game. You know, we kind of saw the peak of what things could be when they won the regular season in the Big East tournament title, but then was knocked out, you know, early in March Madness. This season has been overcoming adversity, right? Like you said, Stevie was out. We suffered a loss when Stevie was out. We suffered two losses when Tyler was out. We suffered two losses when Chase Ross was out. So every loss except for Purdue and Wisconsin, we had an injured player, right? And the team has found ways to overcome, win anyway, that sort of thing. So if you look at the belief in the process and the system, the culture, the resiliency that's kind of been built over these last 2 years, it feels like this is kind of, assuming Tyler comes back fully healthy, ready to go, this feels like we got something. Right. This feels like, again, it's not destiny, but this is how you would build towards a crescendo that is, you know, going deep in this tournament. So you know, I'm pretty darn excited about, you know, what this all looks like. And we also got, you know, we're getting contributions from Trey Norman. To your point, you know, to your point about, hey, you can win different ways. You know, if Tyler needs a break or somebody's not has an off night, okay, we can get 7, 8, 9, 10 minutes from Trey Norman and probably be okay, right? If we get into foul trouble, we'll probably be okay. That's the kind of things you need. I mean, what was who stepped up in the Holy Cross game? Was it Novak? Novak was in the Pittsburgh game, but when Marquette...
It was Diener. Diener had a great game against Holy Cross back in 03, you're talking?
Yeah. So Wade had an off game, right? And obviously Wade was what won the Kentucky game, right? Just the world's most dominant performance.
But most games, really, but yes. Especially yes. The Kentucky game.
Right, but that Holy Cross game, and I don't, you know, fans that weren't around for then, you know, may not know this, but like... You know, Marquette almost lost that Holy Cross game. If it weren't for Diener playing hero, Marquette could have gone out, you know, in the opening round. But they won that game. And then, you know, Dwayne Wade exerted himself. And certainly the rest of the team, you know, contributed. But that's how you get to a Final Four. So it takes different pieces to win. And this feels like a team that's a collection of pieces that you can put together in all sorts of interesting ways and have an impact.
Yeah, I would even say another example from that 0-3 run was the second round game against Missouri, where, the starters had a great game, but the bench did not miss a shot in that game. it was Steve Novak, who was a freshman on that team, Joe Chapman, who I'm sure everybody knows now just because, you know, Joe's a big, you know, summer basketball coach. He coached, you know, he coaches, you know, kids in the summer now up in the Milwaukee area, but also he coached the TBT teams, and he was obviously a four-year player at Marquette, but Joe was a freshman on that team. And then there was another guard. He ended up transferring, Caron Bradley, came off the bench in that game. And those three guys, they all hit they all hit shots in that game, especially in overtime, especially Novak. But yeah, that was a game where the bench kind of lifted up what the starters were doing. But yeah, it does take a whole team to go deep. And then fast forward to this team. Yeah, it is comforting that Trey Norman is looking more comfortable. And yet Tyler being out sucks. But the fact that there's been a need for more minutes from the younger guys and that they have gotten more comfortable out there, especially Norman. But yeah, to your point that maybe if Marquette ends up playing 3 games in 3 days in New York, that's a lot of minutes. Maybe you want to go some extended minutes with Trey. And again, if Tyler or Cam or Stevie is in foul trouble or you just need an extra guard for whatever reason, you can be comfortable putting Trey Norman in a game that matters now, as opposed to, say, back in November where it's like, I don't know, man, we're just going to try these freshmen against the bye teams. I don't know about playing them in Hawaii or anything, or against Wisconsin or anything like that, right? But now, if you need Trey Norman in a first or second round tournament game, yeah, I think you can put him in there and trust him.
Right, yeah, exactly. And again, you know, the other piece of this is, you know, Trey and the other players are playing in adverse minutes, right? Like the second half of that Xavier game, you know, Marquette got punched in the mouth, right? Like coming out of halftime. I mean, I think it was something like an 18-4 run for Xavier extending into the end of the first half. And we didn't even get to the 16-minute mark of the second half. And you know, Shaka was taking time out and trying to get things straight. And they won, right? And, you know, they won through foul trouble. David Joplin had a rough game by his standards, was in foul trouble. Oh, so Igodaro had 4 fouls before the 8-minute, the under 8 in the second half. And I think, you know, if we had no Tyler and I told you David Joplin's not going to hit a 3 and Oso Igodaro is going to be in foul trouble on the bench with 4 fouls at the under 8 timeout, how much would you have assumed we would have lost by?
I would have said we probably lost a heartbreaker, yeah. I would not have felt great about that game at all.
Right.
But yeah, like the fact that Oso ended up playing 36 minutes, the fact that, you know, Shaka is like, well, we got to have him out there. And Oso went out there and probably played, what, 5-6 minutes with 4 fouls and didn't foul out of the game?
Right.
I mean, it was just played a smart game, played excellent.
Yeah. And you know, again, I don't think that I think officials are bad in general, right? But there were certainly some questionable calls in the game. But again, to be able to play with 4 fouls, knowing that there's a microscope of sorts on you, and winning anyway, that is just some of the most intelligent basketball I've seen, right? And it goes unremarked on the stat sheet, right? Like there's, you know, there's no stat for was able to keep themselves in the game so they could make a difference. You know, that stat isn't a thing. But, you know, and again, these are things, you know, it's one of those we can build on these things, right? So we get Tyler back, and maybe this is the pivot point to the Big East tournament, but I'm presuming we're getting Tyler back at the minimum for the big tournament. He was taking shots during warm-up before the Xavier game, which is not the same as being able to contort your body and throw passes cross-court and stuff. But he was taking shots. Shaka has continually said, hey, he's doing better and better. We're going to reevaluate before the Big East tournament. So I'm assuming he's back. That you know, again, that's some pieces we can put together.
Yeah. Before we pivot to the Big East tournament, one thing I did want to touch on in that Xavier game that's worth noting, the way that Marquette closed that game, the final like 6.5 minutes, it was like the final 6:25, they did not miss a shot. I mean, any shot they missed, they got fouled on and went to the free throw line. But officially, they did not miss a shot in the final 6:25 of that game. I mean, that was a combination of good shot selection and just good shooting. Getting a good look, whether it was getting it inside to Oso, outside shooting from Cam. Stevie Mitchell hit a big one. Like, yep. They left him wide open, and Stevie just took that shot confidently and hit it. To be able to close like that was really, really impressive.
Well, and look at clutch time Stevie, right? Like, Stevie hit, not only did he hit that big three, he had four clutch free throws down the stretch. Xavier was not in the super bonus, so they were 1-1s. In fact, Cam missed the front end of a 1-on-1, which, no, I'm not picking on Cam. I'm just, and I don't know that this is in fact, but it just feels like Cam misses a lot of front ends of 1-on-1s late in games.
That's kind of more anecdotal than stats to back it up. But yeah, like, thing is, you remember the misses more than you remember the makes. But yeah, right. I know what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so again, and it all worked out fine. Nothing but love. But to your point, Stevie was clutch, right? And that's usually a window where Tyler Kolek, who's shoots what, 89% from the free throw line. That's usually where you're counting on Tyler to, one, be able to receive the pass, you know, withstand some contact, not turn it over, get to the free throw line. The fact that we were going to Stevie Mitchell in those moments, who I don't know whose handle is better, Cam or Stevie's, but like, Stevie being in clutch in those moments, again, that's something I don't know that we've seen before, but if that's something he can do, and it's now Stevie and Tyler that we can depend on in late game situations to go to the line, not get those jitters, even also late game situations, right, at the free throw line. We know what he's capable of. We've seen it. Yeah. He's gone from a not great free throw shooter to at least a decent one. Right, so we've got.
I swear, I don't know, have the stats to back it up, but I swear, Oso with like under 3 minutes to play in the game is like Steph Curry from the free throw line.
Yes, 100%.
He hits it, man. He does when he has to.
Right, and so again, we've got some folks with ice water in the vein that we can win close games. You know, we could lose the opening round. There is no question, but this team is built to win different ways with different folks that can step up in different moments. I think this season is just really, and again, it's why I said I don't care about the regular season title. I don't care about the Big East title or the Big East tournament title, because all of these are moments that are putting tools in the toolbox for when we go to the NCAA tournament and go win the whole friggin' thing.
Yep. Absolutely. A lot of reasons to be a little bullish on this team, and it's just buy a little stock on these guys because they are playing well, and if they do get Tyler back at full strength, watch out, could be really exciting. So let's talk a little Big East tournament, but before we do that, a quick heads up on a programming note: we are tentatively planning to do an extra pod this week. I say tentatively because sometimes life gets in the way and ruins our plans. But we are hoping to do a podcast with Alan Bukowski of Crack Sidewalks. He will be talking brackets specifically because that is his forte. That's what he writes about all the time on cracksidewalks.com this time of year. Alan is one of the best on the internet, really, at doing brackets. He's going to dive deep on the numbers and what has to happen for Marquette this week and other tournaments around the country as far as how it could shape Marquette's seeding, maybe what teams would we like to see Marquette face in the NCAA tournament, what teams would we like to avoid, things like that. So look for that in your podcast feeds, hopefully Wednesday. But more to come on that. But again, keep an eye on that if we can get that one out. But as far as you and I talking here, Phil, I'll just start with this. I struggle with what my expectations/emotions are with this Big East tournament because, number one, we're not sure what we're going to get out of Tyler, if anything. We still don't know his status as we're recording this on Sunday night. Even if he is back, the idea of him going from sitting out three games to playing three games in 3 days makes me a little nervous. Mm-hmm. Because, even if he does feel all right, would playing three games in 3 days be a detriment to that oblique at all? I mean, I have no idea. That's between Tyler and the coaching staff and the training staff. But, and also, I didn't care about the Big East tournament last year until Marquette won it. Then it was freaking awesome. And I kind of have a feeling this year in a different way of, I don't care about this tournament. I care way more about the following week, but also it would be cool if Marquette won a couple games or two. So I struggle as far as like what I hope for and what I expect this week. Where are you as you look at this Big East tournament?
I'm at a, unless Tyler Kolek is at 100%, sit him, right?
I'm with you on that for sure.
I'm at the point where I do not care about, that sounds harsh, right? Like, cause again, I would celebrate, I would enjoy it if, Marquette won the Big East tournament, but it just feels like such a grind that's unneeded. Now, Alan may have a different perspective when we talk to him, but I don't feel like Marquette has to do anything in the Big East tournament to get a two seed, right? Like, they're either going to get a two or a three seed. I'm fine with either one. Now, I may get mad or retroactively frustrated with it. Retroactively frustrated with it, but you know, if we get a bad draw or something like that, but I'm fine with a two or three seed, which is I think where we're at. So I just want everyone healthy. I want Tyler fresh. Everything matters for, you know, when the NCAA tournament starts. So I'm gonna watch it. If we win three games in a row and we, you know, beat UConn and, you know, and all this stuff, okay, cool. I'm gonna celebrate the heck out of it. But I am not putting any effort into making that happen, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Ultimately, all I want at the end of the week is A, everyone as healthy as realistically possible, and B, for Marquette to be a two seed.
Right. Yep.
Whatever has to happen, the minimum that has to happen to get me there is what I want. If that means they have to win the tournament, then okay. If that means they're one and done and they can still get that two seed, okay, that's fine too. As long as, again, everyone is healthy as realistically possible, as can be achieved. Obviously, we're not getting Sean Jones back, but like if we can get Tyler not feeling any pain 10 days from now, that's what we want. And if that means we have to sit Tyler this week, then that's what Marquette and the coaching staff has to do. As much as they would love to win the Big East tournament title and have back-to-back championships for this squad, I think they still have I have no doubt that they still have the big picture in mind. If they didn't, they probably would have tried to say, Tyler, okay, see if you can gut it out last week, right? But they didn't do that at all. Like, it's not worth it. We're going to sit you against Xavier, and then if they don't think he's 100%, if there's any doubt, it's probably going to be a game-time decision. They probably don't know at this moment, right?
Right.
They're probably going to wait till they get to New York. They're going to, you know, when he wakes up on Thursday morning, they're going to say, how you feel, Tyler? And he's got to be honest with himself, and he's got to be honest with his staff. If he says, you know what, it's still a little tight, then they'll probably sit him. But if he says he's a full go and the doctors agree, yeah, maybe he might go out there on Thursday. We'll see. I don't know what to expect, and I don't know what to think as far as Marquette goes. Again, all I want at the end of the week is for Marquette to have a two seed and for Tyler to be as healthy as humanly possible. For those of you who like just don't know the bracket, I'm sure you could look it up online, but just to talk about what is coming up. So Marquette finished in a tie for second in the Big East, but through a tiebreaker, they dropped to the 3 seed. So they will be the last game on Thursday. That'll be 8:30-ish Central Time, depending on how long the Creighton game goes. They will get the winner of the 6-11 game. That would be Villanova and DePaul. You would presume that's Villanova. The other games on Wednesday, so that's the first round of the tournament. Butler, Xavier's the 8-9. The winner of that goes and plays UConn. Providence, Georgetown is the other game on Wednesday. That's the 7-10 game. A lot of drama in that one. That one could be tense, especially if Georgetown is able to pull off a win and send Providence home. Ooh, boy. That would be tense.
That's what I care about more than anything, right? Like, I want to see those rivalries.
Yeah, that is spicy. And then the next day, the quarterfinals on Thursday, again, UConn against Butler Xavier, and then the other game in the early session will be the 4-5 game that's already set. That'll be Seton Hall and St. John's. Then the evening session on Thursday, that will be Creighton against the Providence-Georgetown winner, and then Marquette will be the last game against the Nova-DePaul winner. Semifinals Friday, championship on Saturday at 5:30 Central Time. Phil, you know, outside of Marquette, the big thing for me going into this Big East tournament is, like, they got 3 locks for the NCAAs, mm-hmm. and, like, like four bubble teams, right? That
right.
really need a win or two. Just peeking at bracket matrix right now. Yeah, like obviously Marquette, Connecticut, and Creighton are all very, very comfortably in the field. But so many others are sweating it out right now. Villanova, like according to Bracket Matrix, they're on the outside looking in, as is Providence. Seton Hall maybe even a little further back than them. Who else don't leave it now? St. John's. Yeah, I don't think there's a lot of disagreement on those teams. But yeah, to me, this is definitely something we'll talk about with Alan later this week. But to me, it feels like the Big East should have more than three teams in. But there is certainly a world where they only get three. Like if there's enough bid thieves and somebody's going to win between Seton Hall and St. John's. So I would think maybe the winner of that game is going to get in. But
right.
I am not certain at all.
Well, I mean, there's a non-zero chance that the Big East gets. I think it would be crazy for it to only be three. Like, but there's a depending on how the Big East tournament and the Big East tournament can only hurt you, right? In the form of knocking you out, right? Like it's very rare. And Alan's talked about this, and maybe he'll talk about it more when we record with him. But like, you know. As short of you going and getting an automatic win by winning your conference tournament, like they're not really adjusting seed lines much for folks based on the conference tournament. It's only if, hey, did you lose to any bad teams, right? Like if Nova goes and loses to DePaul, which would be the funniest outcome for yes. Villanova ever. And while I want, you know, the Big East to get as many bids as possible, I kind of want that to happen because it would be hysterical. having said that, if DePaul beats Nova, Nova's out, right? Like they're at bracket matrix right now. They are, you know, they're like the 70th team, right? I think they're something like that. So
they're the first four out. Yeah.
Right. If you lose to a sub 300 KenPom team, it doesn't matter the situation. You're done. Right. So for Villanova to get in, they have to beat DePaul. And then they probably have to beat Marquette, right, to get them another strong victory. So I don't know. It's going to be – the Big East tournament is going to be pretty interesting. But I think at the end of the day, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, just because there's so many teams that need something. That, you know, I think the thing is the flip side of, you know, for both Providence and Nova is they're both in a great situation to get two quality wins and but like then lose to Connecticut and boost their resume without having to secure the automatic. Like if you're either Providence or Villanova, you have a chance to beat both Creighton and Marquette.
Mm-hmm.
And then like get to the final. Then if you lose to UConn, you could still. Yeah, and I agree with what you said because Alan has touched on it before. There's not a ton of movement in conference tournament week as far as moving on the at-large line because almost everyone is going to take a loss this week. But not many teams will get two high Q1 wins this week. So that's why I think both Villanova and Providence have as good a shot as anyone to really move up this week and just maybe get to the point where they're either in Dayton or just, you know, just outside of Dayton and getting into the larger field of 64. But yeah, there will be a lot of intense because, you know, again, those four teams that I mentioned, Providence, Nova, Seton Hall, St. John's, they are all pretty desperate right now. And like none of them can afford to be one and done.
Right, right. Well, and, you know, again, this is where we've stopped caring about the Big East as a whole, right? Like if Marquette can stay healthy, and I'd be even like the ultimate outcome for me is, hey, get Tyler 20 minutes in that game against presumably Nova, right? Just to prove he's got the legs, let him, you know, test it out, make sure he feels comfortable, but get him some time. Nobody gets hurt. Everyone's fine. We beat Nova. And then, you know, let's say we lose to Creighton or whatever. You know, I think that's a fine outcome because, again, it's not going to move things. Though, if we do play Creighton head-to-head at full strength, I feel like that's probably a 2-3 seed on the line for us in Creighton, right? Whoever the winner of that's going to be the two, and whoever loses is going to be the three.
Yeah.
So I think there are real world implications. But yeah, I think just be competitive, get out there. I really, and I know maybe this isn't the way to look at it, but I look at three games in three nights when you're going to have to go, you know, a game every two nights coming up. And I know these are all, you know, young college guys. They're going to be fine. They're going to have their legs, whatever. I don't see the point in trying to win three games against, you know, Creighton, Villanova, and presumably UConn in three nights. Like, it just feels like you're wasting energy or karma or capability that you're much rather save for later in the month. So again, I'm saying the same things over and over again, but I really, as long as we stay healthy and look competitive, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, as we basically focus on the Marquette narrative here, is, you know, something I didn't mention. We were talking about the Xavier game, but you kind of touched on it, was that I think beating Xavier slammed the door shut on any possibility of dropping all the way to a four.
Yes,
I think Marquette is comfortably at worst a three, and I think in decent position for a two right now on Bracket Matrix. They are the last two seed. So the teams they're kind of competing with, the teams just above them, the other twos, North Carolina, Arizona, Iowa State, in that order. And then right behind Marquette, Baylor, Creighton, Duke, Kansas are the threes right now. And then if you're the fours are Kentucky, Bama, Illinois, Auburn. I think those teams have quite a ways to go to pass Marquette. And like you said earlier, there's just not that many games left and not many Q1, like big Q1 opportunities to really leap past that many teams. So yeah, I agree with what you said, that even if they don't play, I think whoever gets further between Creighton and Marquette, like if one of them loses in the quarters, then that's going to be a three, and then the team that goes further is going to be the two coming out of the Big East. And I think there's still a shot that both of them could get a two, depending on what happens in some other conference tournaments. And again, that'll be a question for Alan later this week. But yeah, I'm kind of with you. I think we've kind of exhausted the talk on Marquette. Would it be cool to win? Yes. Hope they win. And thing is, like, the players don't, obviously, for good reason, they don't think like fans, right? Like,
right.
The players, if they're on the floor, they're playing to win. Like, Stevie Mitchell and Cam Jones and David Joplin, they're not going out there thinking, I don't care about this. I should save my energy. I mean, they're guys in their early 20s, right? They're like, dude, I'm going to win this freaking game. Screw these guys. So, yeah, if they're going to be out there, they're going to be playing to win. So, if they're playing to win and they want to win, I want to see them win. But, yeah, I don't even know what to make prediction-wise, just because I don't know what, if any, we're going to get from Tyler. If there's no Tyler at all, I could see, yeah, this being a quick one and done, and then just kick your feet up, get everybody back to Milwaukee, rest up, get your treatment, ice everybody up and hope for the best, get a good seed on Selection Sunday and hope Tyler's ready to go. And then that is a time to gut it out and play in pain if he's not 100%.
Right.
Like I said last week, even if there is some doubt about Tyler's future, you have to be vague and borderline dishonest about it this week, saying, oh yeah, Tyler, he'll be fine. He'll be fine next week. He'll be back. We're just being cautious this week. But I based on what Shock has said, like in a couple of interviews he's done this week, he said Tyler's improving, he's feeling better, and you said Tyler was shooting around in warm-ups, like not strenuously, but just, you know, just going out there and lightly getting up shots. I fully expect that Tyler is going to play soon. Maybe not this week, we'll see. But I also don't waste too much time trying to interpret the Instagram posts of college students, but, you know, Tyler did post this week, story's not finished, you know,
right,
on Instagram, I believe.
Yes, he did.
Tyler's coming back.
All right.
I'm coming back this season is what I mean. Tyler is going to play again this season. We have not seen his last game in blue and gold.
Nope.
I'm pretty confident of.
I would wager my entire house on it, right? He's going to play. It's just a question of which game and how much, right? Like, and again, you know, Tyler could go out, you know, try and gut through it, re-injure it, whatever. And yeah, we'll deal with those ramifications, but yeah, he's not done. He will be back. We will hopefully be back at full strength. You know, whatever bug was going on the last week will hopefully be out of our system from a timing standpoint. Yep, it sucked for a regular season title and maybe a deep run in the Big East title, but that's not what we're here for this year, right? That's
yeah. I would rather that flu bug go through the team last week than next week. That's for sure.
Right. Right. Exactly. So yeah, it'll be. I mean, New York will be interesting. I'm going to enjoy the basketball because, like you said, there are rivalries galore out there that are really, you know, starting to get a little bit heated, and I'm excited for that. And you know, we'll see. Well, let's get some bids out there, and then like you said, we'll talk to Alan this week, and then, you know, next Sunday it'll be Selection Sunday. You know, that's when it really matters, because then it's win everything or you're done.
It's a Christmas day for college basketball fans. I cannot wait for Selection Sunday. And boy, even like, yeah, I'm going to be watching all the Big East games. That Madison Square Garden is going to be electric for that early session on Thursday, because Connecticut's there, and Seton Hall and St. John's play each other. So you got essentially the three local teams are all there in the early session. I think the ticket prices are like vastly different for the AM sessions versus the PM sessions. So yeah, if you are at MSG this week, I am jealous. That's going to be quite an atmosphere. Hopefully Marquette does well. Well, and again, all I really care about is that they come out of it with everyone healthy and a 2-seed resume. One other thing Big East-wise I do want to touch on before we get out of here, Phil. The all Big East teams were announced on Sunday. The Player of the Year, Coach of the Year, Sixth Man of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, I think that's all coming Monday and Tuesday, so we'll maybe talk about that later in the week. But all Big East Conference first team, there were six, which is the weird thing that the Big East does, that, you know, there's five guys on the Big East team plus the Player of the Year, so there's six. But anyway, it's Tristan Newton and Cam Spencer from Connecticut, Baylor Sharman from Creighton, Tyler Kolick made it on the first team, Devin Carter of Providence, and Kadari Richmond from Seton Hall round out the first team. Four of those guys were unanimous, Carter, Kolick, Sharman, and Newton. So that means one of them is the Big East Player of the Year. We will find that out later this week. Second team, Oso Iguodaro made the second team, along with Kaltbrenner and Alexander from Creighton, Dennis Jenkins from Seton Hall, and Eric Dixon from Nova, also on the second team. Only three honorable mentions, which was curious to me. Not the guys that were named. No problem with the Donovan Klingon, Josh Aduro, and Quincy Oliviari from Xavier making the honorable mention. My question is, Cam Jones can't get an honorable mention? Like,
right.
We put six guys on the first team, but I don't know, we can't go, you know, four, five, six, seven, eight guys honorable mention. If you know, I understand why Oso's not on the first team. You can only have so many guys on the first team, and it's tough to have more than one guy on the first team if you're not, you know, crushing the league like Connecticut did this year. But Tyler clearly deserving a first team. Oso was deserving a first team, but I think it's fair to have him on the second team. But like, not even an honorable mention for Cam. If I have a gripe with the All Big East teams, it's that.
Yeah, I will say this. I agree. Like, I think you should be able to, even, you know, even if they voted on it earlier in the season, right? Cam was kind of heating up, but. You know, I think part of this is the mechanics of this, right? One, the coaches vote on it. Two, I think they vote on it before the season's over, right? So they probably voted on this a week or two ago. You know, because
To have it announced on Sunday, yeah, they probably didn't all cast their ballot Sunday morning, I guess.
Right. So you know, Cam's kind of come on late, because there's an argument that, you know, if you know, at this point, Tyler will have missed essentially 3.5 games of a 20-game season. You know, do you still put him as first team All-America or first team conference if he's missed, you know, close to 20% of the season? I don't know. I mean, I would, given his impact and, you know, and that sort of stuff. But, you know, so Cam, I think he should have been honorable mention. I get it. I think what's going to be interesting is how the Player of the Year shapes up, because, again, you do have that Tyler Kolick injury, so he missed some games, but you do have four guys that were unanimous selection. And I think there's one thing to point out that I don't know that people always remember, because Lord knows I don't always remember, but the way the voting works is you can't vote for your own players. So, like, Shaka could not vote for Tyler for first team or Oso for second team, right? He had to vote for other players, and for Player of the Year and Defensive Player of the Year and Sixth Man of the Year, you can't vote for your own guys. So It'll be interesting. You know, Dan and Shaka seemingly are in a good place. So maybe they just say, "Hey, I'll vote for your guy if you vote for me." But you know, a little horse trading. But it'll be interesting. I get why Cam should be there, but quite frankly, and this is me being devious, I'm kind of glad he's not, because then maybe he maintains that that chip on his shoulder, and he's like, "Hey, I'll show you why I should have been on the first or second Big East, you know, team, and show him in New York how exactly important he is."
Yeah, if this makes Cam mad and he just goes on a heater for the next 2, 3, 4 weeks, I'm good with that. I was looking at the press release. The rest of the awards are coming out. So on Monday, most of them will come. So on Monday, we'll find out the Big East Defensive Player of the Year. Good luck, Stevie Mitchell. Most Improved Player, Sixth Man Award, and Sportsmanship Award are announced on Monday. And then on Wednesday is when they will announce the Player of the Year, Coach of the Year, Freshman of the Year, which that's going to be Castle from Connecticut.
For sure.
The only unanimous selection. Yeah, so Freshman of the Year, that's essentially already been announced. But the Player of the Year, Coach of the Year, Freshman of the Year, and Scholar Athlete of the Year, for those caring about that, will be announced on Wednesday. So most of them Tuesday, or most of them Monday, nothing on Tuesday, and then all the big ones will be announced on Wednesday. So
keep it right. I guess just one piece of speculation. Who do you think gets Coach of the Year in the Big East? It's not Shaka. Let's go on the record.
It's Hurley.
It should be Hurley.
Yeah. I you know, sometimes people want to say, okay, well, we can't give it to the guy who won the league because that's kind of what they were expected to do. But, I mean, not that Connecticut was expected to be bad, but I don't know if Connecticut even got a first-place vote in the preseason. I think there was a lot of Marquette and Creighton. But Connecticut, yeah, they're the reigning national champs, but they lost three NBA players from last year's team, and then they ran it back, and they might be better this year.
Right.
And they dominated the league. They won 18 games, which I don't think anyone has ever won 18 games in the Big East before. They won the league by 4 games. Yeah. It's Hurley. I think comfortably. I would say that might even be a unanimous pick. I mean, Hurley can't vote for himself, but I think everyone else in the league probably would.
Right. I agree. It should be Hurley. I know there's lots of folks that are like throwing Shaw's name out there, Shaheen Holloway, I get it because of the narrative of Seton Hall was picked 9th and then they didn't finish 9th. But also, F that guy. You know, Seton Hall hasn't been that good. You know,
he's done a nice job, but I wouldn't vote for him Coach of the Year.
Right, right. And at some point, it's okay to be like, hey, a team we thought was good turned out to be great, and they really made up for a bunch of other deficiencies because they lost players. Hey, that guy's probably a really great coach, right? And so I think it's Hurley when it's all said and done, or it should be.
Player of the year. Do you think Tyler has a shot, or do you think it's going to go to Newton? Someone else?
Well, so I think it's probably going to be interesting, right? Because again, the coaches can't vote for their own players. So there's going to be some split votes, and we know there's shenanigans going on, right? Ed Cooley has said, "Oh, that Devin Carter is his player of the year," which, are you kidding me? Like, Devin Carter's been fine. He's been good. But like, at some point your team has to like be meaningful in conference, right? Like in Providence, I know they lost Hopkins and stuff like that, but it's not like Carter dragged Providence to a top three league finish, right? They finished, you know, middle of the pack. That's me thinking Cooley's recruiting. But anyway,
some people are joking/not joking that like Cooley is just like openly recruiting Carter to transfer to Georgetown.
I believe in that conspiracy, but having said all that, I think there's going to be oddities like that. I think it's going to end up split, right? And I don't know. I would guess Tyler's injury will kind of drag him down. So I don't know that he'll get enough votes for Player of the Year. I think it's either going to be Newton or it's going to be a split between Shireman and Newton.
Okay. Yeah, I guess we'll find out on Wednesday. And I am hopeful that Stevie Mitchell gets the Defensive Player of the Year. I think Marquette did the best job they could of campaigning, but also watching that Connecticut game last week, I was kind of thinking, man, I could see Klingon getting that. Because that dude is just such a game changer in the middle. And, you know, Kalkbrenner's won it twice. I suppose it's possible he could get it again. But I am hopeful Stevie Mitchell gets that. But I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. He's got an outside shot, but I would say if I were a betting man, he's not the betting favorite at this point.
Yeah, probably not. Probably not.
But I mean, when you win the league by like four games, it's pretty likely that you've got maybe the coach of the year, the player of the year, and the defensive player of the year. That feels
yeah,
like...
I am kind of bracing for like a Connecticut sweep. I think Paint Touches even tweeted about that earlier in the week that Connecticut winning every award is not out of the realm of possibility. I mean, they've already got the freshman of the year. Castle's going to win freshman of the year. But yeah, you could easily see Newton getting player of the year, Hurley getting coach, Klingon getting defensive player of the year. Yeah, it could happen, but
for sure, for sure.
Anything else that we needed to touch on before we get out of here, Phil?
No, I think we've covered everything I wanted to cover, and it's been like a lot, and we're going to be back in people's ear holes hopefully a little later this week, so might as well wrap it up here.
All right, yeah, so again, keep an eye on your podcast feeds. Again, we're hoping to get a bonus episode later. I mean, it's this time of year, right? Because as soon as the season ends, we kind of shut it down for a while. So hopefully we still have a month of podcasts left to go. But might as well double up and get a few extra podcasts out to you during March. So keep an eye on that. We'll have Alan on to talk brackets and Big East tournament later this week. But in the meantime, you can hit us up on X, Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF23. At Crack Sidewalks is a team handle. You could go to cracksidewalks.com. We post podcasts on there, and you can leave comments on cracksidewalks.com. And you can also rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Phil, I guess we'll check in with you later this week.
Yeah. Talk to you soon. And, hey, postseason is upon us. This is what we're here for.
All right. We'll be back soon, everybody. Seashells and balloons.